You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to My Every Defender Childhood. Sorry it's been so long, guys. Honestly, it's been a weird summer where renovations and moving took too long, and honestly, I've missed you and missed doing this. Welcome to season 6 of a podcast that I didn't know if we could make through one. So this week, we're talking Dark Crystal, obviously. Now, you'll notice some changes. First, like I mentioned at the end of last season, we're going to every other week instead of weekly. Not twice a month, but every other week, so some months there will be 3 episodes. Also, we will stay Thursdays, but you'll notice some irregularity because of the change in schedules. We're going to try to pick 3 months like we did every month last year, and you guys responded too well. But we've decided that you guys are going to pick the theme month. We obviously chose the first 2 episodes to make sure this month gets recorded without a hitch. But if you follow us on Twitter or Facebook, you're going to get to choose the upcoming month, which is great. It allows us to do more directly relating to you and your wants. Because it's a shortened schedule, though, we're not going to take reruns during the summer, and this should allow us to have more opportunity to provide you with new material. On the flip side, you'll notice that we've changed the numbering of the episodes. In the past, we've done random things. We've incorporated discussions and Geekly Oddcast and TV shows, and we're going to stop doing that. That puts us at this being our 199th movie, which means next week we're going to do our 200th movie, a huge one that you guys have wanted us to do for a long time. So, without further ado, I want to thank you guys for supporting us through 5 seasons and welcome you to the 6th. I encourage you to follow us on Twitter and Facebook and Letterboxd and review us on iTunes or wherever you get podcasts. And once again, from the bottom of my heart, thanks.
Do you enjoy pop culture? Of course you do. You're already listening to pop culture podcasts here on the ESO Network. The Rusted Robot podcast discusses movies, trailers, TV shows, space and robot news, and so much more. Won't you please join us for a pop culture overload wherever you listen to podcasts? TheRustedRobot.podbean.com, a proud partner of the Soulforge podcast here on the ESO Network.
The Rusted Robot podcast. Think about it.
This week, we have returned from a long break, guys. I don't even know what to say, so I'm going to introduce myself and the gang. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defender Childhood, and riffer on Cineprov, kind of still. And on panel, we've got...
Hello, this is Daniel. I'm a little out of practice, so instead of making a witty remark, I'm just going to go,
And I'm Matthew W. Quinn, noted author of The Thing in the Woods and upcoming Little People, Big Guns. And I, too, shall go,
Is that a porn?
Yeah.
No.
Little People, Big Guns.
No. Check out his writing if you can, folks.
Yeah, Matt's maybe the most talented writing-wise among the three of us.
Big time.
Because Daniel does reviews and I have a dissertation, which got me the doctor, but doesn't matter otherwise.
He walks into a room every day going, "Hi, everybody," and we're supposed to humor him, and it's annoying.
"Hi, everybody."
Humor him.
So welcome to season 6.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I've known Daniel for 5 years now. We're obviously starting with The Dark Crystal because we decided tonight after eating pizza that we would watch The Dark Crystal.
This feels like we lost a bet at some point.
And we'll get to that in a second, but welcome back. Obviously, we've lost some time here, and that's because I moved and shit went down, and Daniel and I tried to record something this summer, and it fell apart, and we'll get whatever. This is our new episode to start us off, and it was an episode that people wanted us to do. So, yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Who was it specifically that wanted us to do this? Because I feel like I should hurt them.
Well, we'll talk about
it. I remember wanting to do this before.
Well, and we had some other people who suggested this when we were doing our Muppet Month.
No, it's become this big cult thing, which there's a lot of people out there who are really defending this and begging for a sequel, and I think
That's why they have the prequel.
Yeah, Netflix is going to release probably in a month this prequel series around this, which
is why we thought we would do it, among other things. And I mean, it's why Netflix owns the thing now, so if you want to watch it, it's on Netflix, of course. And I get the feeling people suggest it because, and this is just a working theory, there's a lot of mythology here, but it's bullshit. So, why would people recommend it? Well, they'd recommend it because if you own it on VHS, back when VHSs were $20 in, Reagan's America, so $30 or $40 now, you watched it 1,000 times and you started to see things that aren't there. And I'm sorry, man, this movie is a lot of pretending it's not there.
I can see a prevert bird out there. Oh, sorry, prevert bird.
Goodness. Well, you're kind
of a prevert bird that goes.
It makes the sound that a pervert makes on a phone call. The kind of phone calls that just don't exist anymore, thanks to cam girls.
Now
you're doing
and
real
caller work. ID.
Yeah, right.
I'll be honest. I'd only seen this once before tonight, and pretty sure the way I heard about it was because of that gangster rap sketch on Robot Chicken they did about Dark Crystal. Remember that?
You're right. Yes. I mean, I'll plug someone else because they don't compete with us, but because we don't compete with anyone, let's be honest. Yeah. But Defunct Land did an incredible series on the life of Jim Henson, and he spent significant time on this because Jim Henson spent significant time on this. This movie is a mess because I think Jim Henson suffers from the same disease as George Lucas, at least in this case, which is that he's really interested in how the Gleep Glops look, but they look fantastic, but the directing here is all over the place.
It wasn't even the directing, because the directing, it's an all-puppet movie, which I think was original for Henson, because usually you'd have human actors to balance out the Muppets, right? But in this case, the puppetry is amazing. And what the world he put together from scratch and all the production design is amazing. The plot's a mess.
Right. I realized we were going to talk about how the new show was going to work, but
we need to explain the plot of this one before you explain the show, I suppose.
Matt, honestly, I think you're the only person who can do that. So
yeah, give
okay.
us a go, Matt.
Here we go. In the world of Thra, which I don't know if they call it that in the movie or not, but I've heard it called Thra, there was once this elder race that was screwing around with this thing called the Dark Crystal, and they damaged it and split themselves into two races. The Skeksis, who are basically these evil vultures in rich robes, the prevert birds that I mentioned earlier, and the Mystics are basically ground sloths with 6 legs. And the Skeksis...
5 legs.
I think there was... I swear I saw 2 arms in between the main arm.
It was 5.
It was 5. One side had 1 arm and the other one had 2. Because it's Jim Henson, so it's a little off.
We'll discuss this later. There's a prophecy that the Gelflings, who are these little dog-faced children with mullets, would undo the splitting of the Dark Crystal and the Skeksis' reign of terror. So the Skeksis decide to kill all the Gelflings. And so in the present day of this film, about 1,000 years from when the crystal was broken, we have one Gelfling, Jen, raised by the masters in this valley somewhere. And when the mystics, and the eldest is the master, and the master dies, Jen has to go on the mission to find the lost bit of the crystal and heal the crystal and heal the world, because Skeksis is like draining the world to prolong their debaucherous existence.
Now, when I first heard about like all the species in this movie, I'm like, Gelfing, isn't that the name of a neutered horse? And I had to be corrected, but I mean, the entire time, that's all I was thinking of.
Well, you do see Jen playing the flute naked, and he might be neutered.
Was Gross. He naked?
Looked like he was naked.
I don't think so.
I don't think he's naked. Matt's making his own, like, 4chan page, which is, you know, 30% less white supremacy than an 8chan page.
How's the white supremacy on DeviantArt? I'm assuming that's still kind of low white supremacy.
Well, it's more how many boobs can we put on something that shouldn't have boobs? You know, like...
The Brave Little Movie, pretty much.
The Brave Little Toaster was my first.
The Brave Little Furry.
Oh, goodness.
Do you think that, I mean, kids our age, of course, grew up with the Robin Hood with the foxes as their introduction to furries? I mean, everything has sexy furries now, right? Like, it's weird.
Well, we're getting the big budgeted Oscar-directed movie Cats this winter.
Taylor Swift is a cat person.
Rosario Dawson is a cat person. Does no one have dignity anymore?
No.
Nick Offerman? Is he a cat person?
That was a meme joke, which would have been much, much better than that movie.
Well, I mean, okay, so people have hated on me for hating this trailer for the new Cats because, I mean, I guess I have podcasting enemies now. But here's the thing. All right.
That's his wise juice.
Yeah, that's my pretension.
Do I have podcasting enemies too, or am I just your relentlessly self-promoting sidekick?
No, your podcasting enemies are around the table right now, Matt. No, no. I mean, here's what I'm going to say about
it. Have the Ides of August passed yet? Am I get stabbed to death on the air?
I'm not going to say no.
I mean... We'll wait for sweeps. How about that? But what I was going to say was...
Two men enter, one man leaves.
Probably be talking about that movie.
Yeah, right? Deadliest game this season? Surviving the game this season?
Well,
yeah.
I want to do Death Ring. That's another hunting humans movie with a lower budget.
I love it. I love it all. What I was going to say was... I hate the live-action Disney movies for a reason, which is that... A, they don't need to be made. B, they're cash grabs. And C, they don't add anything to the original story. And case in point, obviously, Cats was a Broadway sensation, which is fine. It's passable. It's the Backstreet Boys to pop music. It's not my thing, but I get why people like it. It's perfectly poppy. It's indifferent. I even have the T.S. Eliot book on my bookshelf. Here's the thing, though. In 1999, there was actually a movie version of the Broadway musical where they filmed it on stage with the people in costume and singing the song. That should be the version that people want. And frankly, the new Lion King movie that just came out, if you made a properly filmed version of the Broadway musical version of the Lion King with those incredible puppets that they made from the Henson Factory... That's a movie I would watch. The CGI nonsense doesn't look like anything.
Well, we can see if Taylor Swift can actually act.
Oh, you know what mystery I didn't need to be solved? Whether the Loch Ness Monster was real and whether Taylor Swift can fucking act, man. At least Lady Gaga, that's her gig. Because even as a singer, she's an actress. It'd be like saying, well, I mean, you know... Justin Timberlake can act, so what is any of these other... What about Aaron Carter? What if he came out of the blue and started beating up Shaquille O'Neal? Which is a reference to a song which shouldn't exist. Anyway, Labyrinth. Hey, we did that one. So Dark Crystal, I guess?
First and foremost, with regards to that VHS version of Cats, John Mills was apparently in that movie. The... late, great British character actor John Mills, which when I found that out, I was... my jaw was on the floor, but anyway...
But I mean, but that's what it should be. Like, because even that first... That Rent movie, which is garbage.
Oh, yeah.
At least they took people who could sing and just made the play on the stage into a movie, right? Why cats? Why CGI? Why forced perspective? Why hire the Gandalf guy? Andy Serkis might as well fucking be in this. Isn't Andy Serkis directing half of this shit now?
I guess so, but...
Well, they killed off Claw in the Marvel movies. What else does he have to do?
I really think that the whole point behind this movie was that Jim Henson wanted to show off the technical innovations he created around puppets and show that he wasn't just, you know, doing Kermit the Frog on a syndicated primetime. He could create a movie that didn't feature humans, that featured puppet characters. So he was more interested in the technical aspect, which is kind of the closest movie to this that came out, well, it's still 10 years old, was Avatar. Because, again, it's about the technical innovations and not the plot.
They're making a Muppet Lord of the Rings. The problem is it's so freaking boring.
Well, and, I mean, the problem is even Lord of the Rings had jokes. The Muppet movie has jokes. The Muppets are nothing but jokes. This movie is nothing but a wet fart of nothing!
Ooh, someone's mad.
Well, I mean,
we just spent, what, an hour and 40 minutes watching this?
Hour 33.
Okay. And composing meatloaf songs that parody this movie.
The thing about this movie is it's nothing that I liked about Jim Henson other than the puppets. And the thing about the puppets is why not hire them out? Right? Like, if you had told me this was a passion project of, I don't know, Lucas... I would have believed you. Because, I mean, apparently the story goes, the original script for what we now call A New Hope, but back then, which is Star Wars. Was literally just an American ripoff of The Hidden Fortress, the Kurosawa film.
It was a bunch of Kurosawa movies all mixed together.
But when the script came out, there was nothing funny about it. It was Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, and Harrison Ford who were funny. And then they added those jokes into the script. But otherwise, it was just a straight drama. And that's what this feels like. That there was no one over his shoulder, no Frank Oz, no whatever, making joke-em-ups. And the only funny character, which was Agsu, or Agersu?
Agra.
Agrabah.
we had an Aladdin song parody, too. Yeah. Nick was funny. Let's see if we can sing it.
Really? Are you going to put me on that spot for an improv? I don't remember what I said 6 minutes ago, and we're 10 minutes into the podcast.
Yeah, that's kind of a
tall
order.
That was hilarious.
But the weird, busty, one-eyed puppet, which was voiced by Frank Oz.
Goat astronomer.
She was the only funny character. She had gags. She had bits. You know, this had nothing!
You know what this reminded me a lot of for...
Dyspepsia?
Well, besides that, Ralph Bakshi's Wizards.
Yeah, there weren't enough tits. Well, there was one pair of tits.
Yeah, there was quite a problem.
Belonging
there.
To a goat woman with one eye.
Again, Ralph Bakshi's
you're
Wizards.
You're describing me dating in college before I met my wife.
What?
Ooh, Nick.
I didn't know. Anyway,
I didn't know you were into that sort of person.
That sort of goat woman.
Anyhoozle, that whole movie was trying to build up a mythology from scratch as well, but it was mythology that was, A, grounded in real-world history. It was pretty much Earth just, I don't know, like 200,000 years into the future or something like that.
Like after Earth.
Basically, but then the whole thing is that one race discovers Nazi memorabilia, so they decide, okay, we're going to do that. Yeah, well, maybe later, but anyway.
That's what the goat's job is for.
Well, that was one reason, though, that movie was kind of grounded, because it's like, okay, I kind of get the sort of stakes that are here presented in this movie. The other thing about Wizards was there were jokes about the religions of the future, like with these rabbis that were worshiping a Pepsi logo and stuff like that.
Well, I will bring up one thing that you just mentioned. This movie takes zero risks. Either. And not that you have to take risks to make a successful movie, but like until the very last act where the female Gelfling is being tortured, mm-hmm. there's not even really trouble or trauma or conflict of any sort, right? Like, what you want is...
Except for a bunch of giant crab monsters doing the Kool-Aid man through any nearest wall.
But they never catch anyone. They don't. You don't see them hitting or killing anyone. Like the thing about Luke Skywalker, which this is so ripping off, is that the first act is his aunt and uncle, his caretakers, are murdered horribly, right? Why don't the Gelfling Jen, our main character, who is as lifeless and colorless and awful as anything, like, at least, I mean, Luke Skywalker, and I love Mark Hamill, but he's a whiny little bitch in that first movie until he learns to... like, become a character. Literally lay a slap.
But I want to go to the Tachi station and get the power converters.
I mean, the only way you can summarize Luke, and I love that movie, and I do, but Luke in that first movie is Cartman going, meh, until Leia slaps the shit out of him, saves herself a fraction. Don't forget, she's been tortured for weeks. She grabs the gun, rescues them, right?
Mm-hmm. Now the like, sky, this, there's a Skywalker whining gene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Gelfling here is Prancibald. He's like...
Well, I'll tell you one thing. First, the whole description of one of the villains just reminds me of...
We, the crab people, are here to take over you through the Jeffersons!
But anyway, besides that... thank you, Matt. That's the thing about the story, and I think all of us mentioned Joseph Campbell at some point while we were watching this. It was an afterthought. It was just, okay, here's the monomyth, here's the arc. And if you, I think there was a comic adaptation of the original Star Wars script. Go read that. It's terrible.
It is.
It's awful. Well, but that's essentially what this is it's a bunch of mythology they try and cram into this very short time, but they expect everyone to kind of get it.
It would have been better if it was shorter, because I don't hate the movie as much as you guys did, but it is so boring.
Matt, here's the problem, though. It's 93 minutes. This is one of the shortest movies we've ever done on this podcast.
Wait, this was only 93 minutes?
This is 93 minutes.
Yeah, more or less.
It's an hour and 33 minutes.
I don't believe
you.
And
that includes the credits. This is Netflix, so that includes the credits. This is a blissful, this is a nap movie. Nothing happens. And half of it is lumbering, like, condor creatures walking across a room, not speaking.
I didn't even really understand, because there's that one scene at the beginning where I guess it's the Skrexis?
The Skeksis.
Skeksis. Skeksis.
Okay.
You're bringing Skeksis back.
Okay.
Back!
The vulture-looking things.
The prevert birds.
Yeah, the prevert birds.
Them prevert motherfuckers.
Okay. Well, there's that scene where they're kind of introduced by just looking at their dying emperor, and then he dies, and there's that Evil Dead ripoff thing where his body dissolves and turns to dust. Yeah. And it's like... what does this mean? What am I looking at exactly? How does this establish... who these characters are.
So,
they're a decadent, dying race.
Well, there's a whole bunch of ways you could show that. I mean, just off the top of my head, you ever seen Dark City?
Yes.
No.
You've never... Okay, you should go check Dark City out, Matt, but that's also about this dying foreign race and, well, not foreign, alien race, but...
Or movie we've done, which... some of these characters look a lot like, which is the Fifth Element.
Yeah, exactly. It's that sort of thing. But it establishes what they're looking
for. I'm now imagining the Chris Rock and Thraw screaming his head off.
You know why that'd be great? There'd be a person in this! There's no people! And the reason I don't care... I mean, you can do a puppet movie if you want. The problem is, even in Muppet shit, there's human beings because... you need someone to react off of, because Muppets inherently move very slowly.
That's a part of it. Well, actually, that's a big part of it, because it's usually the human characters that are your entry into this puppet world, and the puppets are just sort of set decoration. But at the same time, because, you know, Michael Caine took the fact that Kermit was his employee at that lone house seriously... I took it seriously, right?
They are humans in that you treat them like people, but at the same time, we need an in. This is the most foreign movie that we've done in some ways.
And that's the other big thing about it, because even with the other alien races, there's at least some visual cues that they're evil. Like, they're shrouded in shadow, for example, or they're dressed in dark clothing. And this just is like, okay, they're like giant turkeys. They're giant vultures. So what?
So Jim, you know, it's me, George Lucas. I think you're stealing a lot of my bits here, buddy. You know, Return of the Jedi is coming out in 2 years, and
I've got a question for you there, George. Do you still want me to direct your Jedi movie? Because I just directed Dune, George, and I'm wanting to take a second stab at science fiction.
I want some essence of George Lucas and essence of David Lynch to feed the Emperor.
Jim, you gotta bail me out, man. Like, can I at least borrow Frank? Because this shit's out of control. I got all these other...
What if we make it so Darth Vader's breathing in helium and he wants to just rape women? What if we do that, George? I think that'd be a great movie.
Hey, it's me, Brian De Palma. You know, I think Leia should show more cleavage. You know...
Hey, well, Brian, I'm going to take your notes because, you know, when she's slave Leia, it'd be great if she had some tits on that one there, George.
Can we get Yoda to speak backwards, George? Just for one scene. Trust me, people will overinterpret it to death.
Well, we have Yoda in this movie, a dying ground sloth wizard.
Yeah, hey, yeah. You know, this is Jim here, George. I saw Empire, and I know you didn't direct it here, buddy, but what if all of my characters spoke like Yoda? You know, there's Skeksis, and I noticed that, you know, Yoda is kind of Skeksis himself, if you get my drift.
Well, one wonders what he was doing on Dagobah by himself for 20 years.
Half of this movie is filmed on fucking Dagobah. There's swamps everywhere. There's little critters everywhere.
And there's no Kermit singing, as far as we know.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows?
That's a little slurry.
Miss Piggy broke up with me last week, you know.
Frog? Go to hell, frog.
Oh, Creamy, you just drink too much.
You know, I'm sorry, Piggy.
I told you to get off the sauce, frog.
Piggy, it's the only thing that keeps the swelling down when you come back. Oh.
You mean you do it for moi?
I can't fucking deal. Daniel, I thought I was good at voices till I met you, buddy.
We need to make this a Patreon reward.
I have a feeling I'd have to pay people to do that.
We have to polish this up a little, but you know what? It's the best part of my week.
Patreon reward to have Daniel mimicking all the characters, because he can do it. Can you mimic the Chamberlain besides...
No, cannot, because I'm pretty sure...
Well, because the Chamberlain is essentially Grover, but, like, in a fetish outfit, so it's like...
I will be the Emperor!
Yeah, pretty much.
Or Yoda fetish outfit.
That's the whole thing. What are the stakes of this movie exactly?
Well, but that's just it. There are literally no stakes because the two plots are not connected.
If the... Basically, the three sons will conjunct, and... If the dark Gelfling will heal the dark crystal. There's a prophecy, and so the idea is that Jen and Kira have to take the last shard of the crystal to the Skeksis castle and fix the dark crystal before the third conjunction, or else the Skeksis will live forever and rule the world.
Well, okay.
Okay, and then
you're
what?
Fine, but that's bullshit. Because they say that will happen again and again, right? The suns line up regularly.
Every 1,000 years.
Fine. So it could happen again another 1,000 years. And the Skeksis already rule the world.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's about stopping their rule, not preventing their rule forever. Right? No, I'm not poking at you. I'm just saying that the plot doesn't make sense. And then finally... The Skeksis are tied to a group called the Mystics, mm-hmm. right? And the mystics are a bunch of old fucks who are waddling around.
Well, that was the other thing that I think I even said halfway through, because the mystics are connected to the Skeksis. So to the point where if a Skeksis dies, a mystic dies. So if the Skeksis are evil, and the whole purpose of this movie is to prevent them from continuing to rule the world, why didn't the mystics just, I don't know, all commit harikiri or something?
Well, and also, to be blunt, there's seven of them left. We see them all at the end. They're waddling across the desert, which, again, feels very Star Wars-y.
Well, doesn't that also mean that there's only seven Skeksis left?
More, yeah, pretty much. You know, what, you know, now the Werner Herzog beginning, you know, they have this whole narrator.
Yeah.
And now there are only 10.
Matt has entered our world, finally. I do like the idea, though, that at the end, Jim Henson is just like, and then at the end, there's the great merger, and we will not watch this, but I will watch it myself. And
during
oh
the
my
great
goodness, this is just terrible.
During the great conjunction, the Skeksis and the mystics must determine their destiny. They must decide if they will join together as one.
Well, the Skeksis didn't seem to have a choice in the matter. They're getting dragged into the mystics.
So, Matt,
but first,
I'm going to talk only to you for 1 second because Daniel's listening, and I'm going to whisper. One of my favorite, I've argued with you for a long time about this. Daniel is fantastic at the voices, and I do try. I would love him to read children's books for the Patreon. In his voices. Can you imagine Hop on Pop with his Werner Herzog? Can you imagine, like, I mean, right? Goodnight Room with his, like, George Lucas or whatever? Or, like...
I think we should do this.
I mean, because, like, you talk about his voice, like... But, like, you should do this for the Patreon. That's not an idea. But I'm taking your idea and applying, like... his Christopher Walken to the Lorax. These trophula trees.
I do not like them, Sam I Am. I do not like the green eggs and the ham.
And I could do... the one thing I'm sure I could do is my Kermit the Frog, yeah. Which
and,
is...
And I'm a little out of practice.
Daniel and I could do the world's most inappropriate Rocky and Bullwinkle routine. You know, hey, Rock, want to go to Thrawn and go hunt some Skeksis?
Fuck no, Bullwinkle!
But they're destroying the world with their debaucherous ways, Rock.
We've been over this 100 times and I just don't give a shit anymore.
Mister, I said with a sawdusty sneeze, I am the Lorax, I speak for the trees.
And the trees will all be cut down by the Skeksis to live their debaucherous lifestyle, Rock. Don't you want to help the Lorax?
Frankly, I'm just waiting until I get to see David Bowie in those tight pants, Bullwinkle.
Are you cheating on me, Rock?
Of course I am!
You little whore.
Oh, and scene. All right, guys. We
should kind of... There's some interesting stuff in this movie, please. But it's all the visual... Anyway. It's all the visual stuff. It's all the puppet work. It's all... Like that scene, and I could not tell you the context behind it, but it's like the Last Crusade scene where they're trying to give the new emperor for the Skeksis that potion to make him young again.
Yeah.
And they do that morph effect where he goes from an old vulture to a younger-looking vulture, and then he looks at his hand and it's an old hand again. That's, for this sort of a movie, that's an amazing effect.
Well, I mean, and there's that scene where they go to the bar, the Mos Eisley Cantina, and then the crab men come in. The Gramlings?
Gartham.
The Gartham.
The Mos Eisley folk music environment.
But it's just... Well, I mean, we were pointing out at the time, it's all Fraggle Rock characters.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to ask.
Yeah, there's like a
the gorge.
There's a Facebook meme where it shows this like distressed looking cat and a bunch of Peter, Paul, and Mary types, and it says, you know, rescue cats trapped in a folk music environment. Mm-hmm. Well, we have two dog faced mullet creatures trapped in a folk music environment until the Gartham show up.
Okay, what was the name of that one like dog creature that has like two sets of teeth, one where
Fezzigig.
Yeah, that thing. Yeah. What was the purpose behind that character?
I think he's Kara's dog.
Yeah, well, he is.
But, and, I mean, what does that show towards the plot? I mean, from what I can tell, it was like a visual effect and nothing else.
I mean, he bites a character at one point. He bites one of the Skeksis to...
Oh, yeah, and then he gets, like, knocked down into
Mount Doom. They throw the dog into Mount Doom, which really made our audience not happy with the Skeksis.
Well,
but this being a children's movie, he found a convenient ledge.
Well, but that's the point, right? Like, it's very Chekhovian, right? Like, it's you have a character introduced to bite the guy who does the thing, who does the verb. Well, to quote Clone High, he verbs the adjective noun. Like, it has no purpose other than to be like, I matter for 6 seconds. And
they might as well have brought in a Nork or something into this movie.
Yeah. Or Snork or Smurf or any fucking thing. The reason why this movie is frustrating to me is, other than it feels like it should be a D&D campaign, it has so much thought into something that feels like it's either both unexplained and overexplained.
Mm-hmm.
It takes too long to get anywhere because we all agreed. At 93 minutes, it felt like it should have been 100 minutes and 120 minutes at that.
Well, and it felt like it was 120 minutes.
It felt
like
it was 120 minutes. Or worse. And it should have been 120 minutes, but everything takes forever. The fact that Jen and Lady Friend walk at the slowest pace. Mm. And the sketch.
Oh, you mean the Bjork? A woman who was like constantly, that was their musical numbers, was her like trying to talk to the creatures of this world.
They have a weird sex scene where it's all flashbacks to things that neither of them can do. And then
it's flashbacks to their families all getting killed by the Skeksis that they kind of mind meld with each other.
Dream meld, and you're like, are we gonna murder Shannon Tate next? Or,
oh, good lord.
Right? But it's cult shit. Yeah. You're like, oh, well, good lord.
Back in
As
the day,
though Once Upon a Time in the West isn't out.
Oh, you mean Hollywood?
Yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Excuse me. Once Upon a Time in the West is a movie that exists for a good reason.
I like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm just saying.
Really?
I did.
I haven't seen it.
It's a good movie.
Oh, fine.
Well,
fine, asshole.
Speaking of nostalgia and stuff that happened way in the past, so there was a time when fantasy was kind of taboo.
1981 when this came out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that was like what the nerdiest nerdlinger nerds would pay attention to.
Like us.
Even
I didn't see this in 1981 because I wasn't born yet.
Well, I saw the exhibits of it in the Center for Puppetry Arts when I was a little kid.
I've seen them too. They're still there, and they're great, but I'm talking about like Homer Simpson's college roommates.
What?
Thank you, yeah, Nick, for getting that. Those would be the sort of audience for fantasy back in the day. It just was not a mainstream genre. And
Mr. Sedis, we all have nosebleeds.
No, I want those geeks out of my house.
I'm sorry, I can't do Marge, but
no one can.
No, except the Julie Kavner.
Yeah,
but,
exactly right.
But I mean, that was the whole thing. So whenever people made fantasy, they didn't bother to really explain anything because they figured the people who were actually in that audience would sort of get it.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the same with Ralph Bakshi.
Well, I mean, the difference was, I was going to say Ralph Bakshi had jokes, but he really didn't. The budget for Ralph Bakshi must have been smaller.
Oh, a lot smaller.
Because like that had an independent feel. The movie we just did feels more expensive. I mean, like, the problem is now in 2019, we're talking about movies that have a $250 million budget because they're going to make $1.5 billion. The movie we're talking about was profitable, but profitable with like a tilde, right? Like, it's profitable-ish.
Well, I mean, that was better than Labyrinth did because that bombed.
Well, but that's what I was going to say. Like, this movie people showed up for because they thought they were going to see the Muppets. You know, this is going to be the Muppets in Dark Crystal.
Oh, is this? Would this have been like what was that Muppet movie that Troy McClure took?
The Muppets Go Medieval.
Yeah, yeah. That.
I was gonna say the Muppets in Middle Earth.
Why not?
Better movie.
Better movie.
But is Frodo Kermit the Frog?
I would imagine Frodo would be Gonzo.
Rolf, carry me.
Yeah, that's better.
I think Kermit would be Gandalf, and Miss Piggy would definitely be
Eowyn.
Eowyn, yeah.
Is that,
no,
that would mean
be Galadriel. Let's be honest. She'd right. be Galadriel.
She could be Eowyn, and Kermit could be Faramir.
You frog. Rizzo would
Rizzo would be Gollum.
No. I think Kermit would be Samwise. Gonzo would be because you want Gandalf to be a secondary character, right? Because he disappears halfway through that first movie. He dies fighting the Balrog.
Yeah.
And you're not going to make three Muppet movies based on this shit, right? Are you?
You can try at this point. Disney Plus probably needs the programming.
You know what would be great? If Gimli was Sweetums and they just shrunk him.
Oh, yeah. There you go. You win.
and the Eagles were all Big Bird.
We seem to want to discuss anything but this movie.
Because there's nothing to this movie.
Fuck me.
I mean, at least when we saw Labyrinth, there was a lot to talk about.
Like the size of Bowie's, hair.
Yeah, yeah. And his, oversized musical numbers.
Yeah, musical numbers. I mean, and the thing about the musical
that didn't
numbers,
really fit in the movie that well.
No, they were a little packed in to the movie. You could kind of tell they were just kind of about ready to just burst from the movie at any moment.
Well, and at least it brought the women in the movie a joy. The bulginess of those musical numbers.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing about this movie is, it just feels like an art movie project.
Well, which would have been fine because, and I still lament the death of Filmstruck because I'm one of those people, so feel free to throw shit at me, but they used to have all of Jim Henson's old art movies, like when he was a student, and all of his early TV work, and it's really good stuff.
Well, and art film is not easy for people. And again, I'm a film minor. I mean, and I know Danny Boy, you and I watched a lot of art film. Mm. At least art film, you go into it knowing what it is. This movie is trying to be other film too hard. You don't have a Wayans Brothers version of art film, right? And like that's
I'm now imagining a Wayans Brothers version of The Dark Crystal.
It would be like
Are the Skeksis gentrifying?
No, it would be like that rap op. It would be that rap opera version from Robot Chicken.
You know what it is? Honestly, Animaniacs. Yeah. Right? Animaniacs is the comedy adaptable, like gentrified, whatever version. Like it's the subaltern version
by Warner Brothers and or sister hand or none. The Skeksis' reign shall be undone, and they all sing.
Yes! Why
like,
not?
You nailed it. Like that's what it needs.
And maybe Wacko can hit on Agra. Hello, nurse.
Well, I mean, it's the same way that Muppet Babies was all the Lucas and Spielberg shit. Right? Like, you need a filter to feed it through. There's no filter here. There's no comedy here. There's no joy. Like, and I mean, Matt, you referenced me at one point saying, like, there's charm to a movie. The charm here is all in the effects and the character creation, mm-hmm. which does not make it a movie. One of the most impressive things I've ever seen Criterion do, and this is the most pretentious bullshit we've ever talked about on this podcast, but like Yellow Submarine is a bullshit, terrible movie. I enjoy it because I like the Beatles. I'm that end of the millennial scale. And yet Yellow Submarine is awful. It's awful. But the Criterion version has a neat trick.
There was a Criterion version of Yellow Submarine?
I believe so. And if I'm wrong,
we all live in an expensive box set. An expensive box set.
There's a DVD version at least, and I thought it was Criterion. If I'm wrong, I apologize. But you can switch it where you turn the dialogue off, and you just listen to the soundtrack the whole way through.
Ooh, that'd be good.
That's what this needs. You don't understand what they're saying because the dialogue is garbage. But if you just saw that amazing puppetry with 5.1 surround sound and an amazing soundtrack, and this soundtrack is C-. But if you got someone, hell, Labyrinth has David Bowie doing it, and, I mean, I was talking Yellow Submarine, it's George Martin and the Beatles. If you just had someone doing something with this audio, the visuals are incredible. I told the guys when we watched this, it would be an interesting Italian film, right? If
yeah,
you didn't
did.
Understand what they were saying, but you were just looking at this visual, because everything moves, man. I guess this brings us to final judgment for a movie we've barely talked about, but Suddies.
All right.
So okay. Death is better than talking about
movie. You know what this reminds me the most of is Avatar. By which I mean, it is such an impressive tech demo. And when Avatar was released, that's what everyone was talking about. How amazing it looked. How utterly groundbreaking the 3D effects were. And at the time, nobody had ever seen anything like it, so it was. But the story was shit. The dialogue was shit. There was no human element to it. Oh. It was just a tech demo. And that's kind of what this is. The puppetry work is amazing. The production design is amazing.
Well, in Avatar, when the cat people's tree got blown up, I actually felt sorry for them. When
when
Kira gets stabbed to death by a Skeksi in this one, I didn't feel anything at all.
Well, there you go then. But it kind of just shows that maybe even James Cameron did a little more with that material. But that's just what it reminded me of. This is an impressive tech demo that shows some really great production design, really great puppetry work, but there's no human element. There's no reason for me to care about it, which at least Labyrinth, you know, like it or hate it, we got a great soundtrack out of it.
Matt?
I remember seeing a lot of paraphernalia for this when I was a little kid, and I didn't see it in the actual movie until I was in high school, and I liked it then. But watching it now is just so draggy and slow and boring. I mean, maybe the new Netflix show, which is a prequel, called Age of Resistance, where it's, I guess, about the Skeksis take over the world and the near genocide of the Gelflings. That could be like the Silmarillion, maybe. But this movie, just, I guess if you must see it to see the Netflix show, see it. But it's really not that entertaining, even though it's technically marvelous. And that's just sad.
This hurts me in a way that I feel very uncomfortable with, because I agree with both of my comrades here. This is not even anything. It just feels like a waste of everyone's talents, man. Like, it made profit, as we talked about. It funneled that profit into other disappointing projects. And then eventually, when they tried to make another non-Muppet movie, it caused Labyrinth to suffer. And Labyrinth is a better movie. This movie frustrates me in every way because there's no charm. The main character, Jen, feels empty. It seems like Jim Henson was more interested in the villains, and then the villains have nothing to do.
They just sit around having giant evil debauchery feasts with slaves and shrieking at each other.
And apparently the only reason we understand one of this, I think it's like a 5 or 6 minute sequence where they're eating this feast in the middle of the second act, is because apparently the studio told them to make subtitles and make them speak English because Jim thought it would have been more brilliant if they only spoke in their own language. This movie is just a mess. It's a wet blanket.
And that feast scene is way too long. At least the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom feast scene had poor Willie getting tormented by all the bizarre food. This one is a bunch of puppets eating.
Well, and it advanced the plot. Because at the time in that scene you're talking about, Indy is talking to someone else who's advancing the plot. The scenes we're talking about now, nothing is advancing the plot.
Well, eventually they do bring in Audra, but it takes way too long.
But they bring in another character. They're not talking about what to do to her, right? This isn't a Stephen King story where, like, people have sex for 20 minutes and then, right? But it turns out they're important. I'm listening to the audiobook of It. It's 44 hours long. I have no self-esteem. Here's the thing. Yeah, it's good. It's very good. It's read by Steven Weber, who was in Wings. Also, he doesn't matter either. No one recommends this movie?
Watch Labyrinth instead.
Yeah, Labyrinth was a lot more entertaining.
This is a wiki if I've ever seen it. I know I make fun of Matt a lot for like TV tropes. This is a TV tropes movie.
Yeah, it is.
You should look it up, understand what it's coming from, and then pretend like you've watched it. I love Jim Henson. This makes me love him less, and I hate that.
Oof.
It's true. I mean, it's true. And guess what?
Well, I'm glad he got the opportunity to at least experiment with something and create an entire puppet movie, because you could tell he really wanted to. So it was good that he got it out of his system.
I mean, you're right. This belongs on Netflix and not have to pay for it.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, and I hope people like it. I think people like it because of Jim and not because of the movie. I could be wrong. I mean, tweet at me. We have a lot of Twitter followers. We have almost 10,000.
Oh, goodness.
And the reason I say that is I love Jim Henson. I want you to tell me why you like this, not because I don't want to like it, but because I do want to like it. I want to like everything he did.
We should make a meme. Nick sitting behind a table. Dark Crystal sucks. Change my mind.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, we're going to do more Muppet shit on this because I love Muppet shit. I really do. But whatever.
What was that? Didn't they do The Wizard of Oz at one point with Beyonce in it?
Not Beyonce. It was someone else. But
Brandy?
I think it was Brandy.
Okay.
But that was after he died.
That was like after there was like a 15-year gap where they weren't releasing movies in theaters, so that was like a direct-to-ABC special.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it was after Muppet Treasure Island, which we've done.
After Muppets from Space, I think.
Which we've done.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. So what I thought we would end this podcast with, since we've already talked about how we hate stuff, how the rest of the season is going to go. And as I teased at the end of last season, we're going to switch to every other week.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Well, and it allows us to do longer episodes, and it allows us to, well, spend more time on episodes. And since we're all working and we're not making, you know, money or time off of this, it makes sense to do it this way. And generally, this one is an exception because of, well, how long it took me to move and get readjusted.
Wait. You're not making money off this and you moved into this house?
Well, I'm making money. The rest of you aren't.
Okay.
Go to my reviews and click on those Amazon links. Make me some money.
7 cents was earned because of this episode.
I'll be at the gas station at the intersection of Ponce and Peachtree. If you could just stick like a single in my underwear, that'd be great.
He's a cheap date.
He's a gas station stripper, apparently, mm-hmm. from this story.
There's no such intersection.
But what I was going to say is we're going to pick themes by month like we did last season, because of the things we decided last season, that one worked out okay. And we're generally going to choose a either successful, popular, mainstream, good version, and a shitty version. So I guess my teaser is that we did this one, which was I'm going to say a surprise. It was just, we were fucking done with everything.
It was a spur of the moment, as it were.
And we were just ready to record a new episode. you know, Sudsy and Matt here were biting at my tail to say, hey, my books aren't selling, or I am so lonely, Nick. So lonely.
That was me.
Yeah.
Those 1 a.m. phone calls.
I mean, I have so many texts just saying, hey, when are we going to record again? Hey, we're going to record again.
Myopia Pinder Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and product of Dude Letter Podcast. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis, and is produced by Ann Burns, Nick Hoffman, Matthew Cole, and Daniel Suttis. Our theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of CompTech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.